Penny a Slip. Introduced by Roy Plumley.
The teams on my right, the ladies, Eleanor Summerfield and Gillian Reynolds, hoping to sort out the gentlemen, Tim Rice and Lance Percival. I read out some pieces about this and that, written by Ian Messiter. These pieces are riddled with mistakes. The first team member to spot a mistake presses a button. The result will be that if it's a member of the ladies' team, you'll hear a bell. If it's a member of the gentlemen's team, you'll hear a buzzer. Scoring when we come to it, and the chairman's decision is absolutely final, even when he's absolutely wrong. First piece. The coincidences concerning the deaths of American presidents of past history are mostly Eleanor Summerfield.
Past history is tautology, you either say of the past or of history.
Right. Two marks. It's one mark for spotting a mistake and another for correcting it, and the marks go to your team. But if you press a button for a mistake that isn't there, perhaps you'll inform us what happens then.
Then the other lot get them instead.
Yes, so they do.
Yes.
Right. Of history are mostly centred around the 100-year difference, Eleanor Summerfield.
You can't centre around, you centre on.
How right, two marks. For instance, Lincoln was elected president in 1850, and Kennedy... Tim Rice.
No.
No, it must be 1860 if it's 100 years, because Kennedy's 1960.
Between you, gentlemen, it was 1860. You have your two marks. Mm. And Kennedy, 100 years later, took office in 1960. Gillian Reynolds.
No, it was later.
He was... well,
or
I
earlier.
Think you've got one mark.
No. No,
Tim Rice.
Well, he technically took office in January 61, although
yes.
He was elected in November 1960.
You have the other mark. Both were shot in the street by assassins. Tim Rice.
Lincoln was shot in the second act.
Yes, very painfully in the theatre, two marks. By assassins who had been born 100 years apart. Both assassins, Gillian Reynolds.
I doubt that. I doubt whether the assassins had been born exactly 100 years apart.
Mm-hmm. You have one mark.
Eleanor, help me. Have a fruitful guess.
No fear. Let's have our one mark.
Right. Well, Booth was born in 1838. Oswald was born in 1939.
Hmm.
Both assassins were killed during their trials. Eleanor Summerfield.
Wrong.
One mark. Anybody?
Yes, Booth wasn't. Didn't get a trial.
What happened to it?
Nor did Oswald.
He got shot on the way
there.
Oswald
was in the middle of a trial.
Booth shot in Virginia for not surrendering. Oswald shot while under arrest. That's the other mark. The second ran from a warehouse to a theatre, and the first ran from a theatre to a warehouse. Lincoln had been...
Did he really? did he really run from the theatre to the warehouse?
Well, tell me.
No, I don't think he did.
He didn't.
No,
right,
I think he ran
mark.
Somewhere quite different.
He didn't run far, they grabbed him.
Anybody?
They?
Where did
log,
he run
log
to?
Log cabin.
It was a small tobacco barn. Lincoln had been warned by a chap called Kennedy, his secretary, while Kennedy had been warned by his secretary, Lincoln, not to travel in the motorcade. Gillian Reynolds.
Well, I don't know about Mr. Lincoln's secretary, and come to think of it, I don't know much about Mr. Kennedy's, but I would doubt that there was that amazing coincidence of secretarial interchangeable names.
Well, let me tell you that Lincoln had been warned by a chap called Kennedy.
Was he a secretary?
He was a policeman. You get one.
Yes.
Lincoln's successor was, like Kennedy's successor, called Johnson. And... Yes, Mr. Percival?
Well, you paused a long time there, so I'm not sure that Lincoln's successor was called Johnson.
Yes, he was. Two to the lady. Mm. And both were born 100 years apart. Ah, Tim Rice.
You mean both Johnsons?
Yes.
I'll take a guess and say they weren't.
Oh, dear. Two to the ladies. Each was what I wanted, not both were.
But both Johnsons were exactly 100 years apart, were they?
Yes.
Prove it.
Neither were expecting to become President of the United States of America, Gillian Reynolds.
Neither was.
Much better. It seems that presidents from election years ending with naught, which occur every 10 years... Tim Wright.
It's every 20 years.
It is every 20 years, too much. Certainly since 1840, three have died from natural causes. Tim Wright.
That can't be right.
Perfectly right, two of the ladies, and seven have been shot. Gillian Reynolds.
Seven haven't been shot.
How many have been shot?
Only two. Just the two.
Two to the gentleman. Four have been shot so far.
Really? Who are the other two?
McKinley.
Oh, yes, indeed. Let's not go into that. The end of the first piece. The ladies have 20 and the gentlemen have 12. Mrs. Sesquipedalian, that pabulary woman, was wearing her Eleanor Summerfield.
That what kind of woman?
Pabulary.
Pabulary? No, wrong.
What's wrong about it?
She's not pabulary.
What does pabulary mean?
I don't know.
You have one mark. Anybody, what does pabulary mean?
It means you come from pabule.
It means pertaining to fodder.
Fodder?
And she wasn't.
No.
Was wearing her finest impion feathered hat when she suddenly thought the sun so hot that she put a loo on her face, which... Gillian Reynolds.
What about the loo? I mean, putting it on her face. I mean, would she?
Couldn't have been that hot.
Yes, she did. She did, indeed. Yes.
She was coming up with a hot flush.
Two to the gentleman.
What's a loo?
A loo is a velvet mask worn to protect the face from the sun in about 1690.
Yeah.
On her face, which she had kept in her Lincian handbag, Lance Preswell.
No, not Lincian. Lincian is something to do with links.
Quite right, yes. What to do with links?
Well, eyes, but, you know.
Links like eyesight.
Yes.
Yeah, 2 marks. Well done. Eleanor Summerfield.
You said she put on her face, which she had kept in her handbag. You can't say that, Troy.
Why not?
Well, she didn't keep her face in her handbag.
If you put a loo on your head, you put...
No, don't like that. Not nice.
She had kept her loo in her handbag, which until a moment or two before, she'd considered impignorating. Taking it off, Eleanor Summerfield...
She considered it what?
Impignorating.
What was? Can't be.
Why?
Because handbags can't be impignorating.
Yes, they can. Impignorate means to pawn or to mortgage. Two to the gentleman. Let's move on. Taking it off because it disturbed her facts, she took from her handbag Tim Rice.
Her what?
Her facts, F-A-X.
No, it wouldn't have disturbed her facts.
What's a fax, then?
I'm not going to answer that on this program.
Two to the ladies. A fax is a head of hair. She took from her handbag a carrick as she went down to visit her lithonode pawnbroker. The one, Lance Bessel.
Well, there's something in there, I tell you. That's either carrick or lithonode. What do you think, Tim?
I'd go for lithonode.
Lithonode.
Yes.
What about it?
Well, it's just wrong. I mean, it's obviously wrong.
Why?
Yes.
What does it mean? Lithonode, what does it mean?
It means you've got to listen to a verse. No, I don't know.
Yeah, you have one, Mark. Lithonode is a hard form of peroxide of lead used in storage of batteries. And a carrick is a large ship fitted for war. It's all very few ladies have them in their handbags. Yes. Seeing him indulging in his quinquivalent meal, and too mean to share it, Lance Percival.
Quinquivalent is 5.
Yes.
Something wrong there. It doesn't mean what it's supposed to mean anyway.
No, it doesn't. You've got your 2 marks. Quinquivalent having a valency of 5. And too mean to share it with anyone, she waited outside and made a noise like a decastyle. Suddenly, Tim Rice?
Like a... What was that?
Decastyle. D-E-C-A-S-T-Y-L-E.
They are very quiet things, and
yes.
She wouldn't make a noise like it.
Why not?
Well, I mean, have you ever heard a decastyle make any noise?
If it's not in good condition?
Correct. I'll get back to you on this.
Decastyle, a building with 10 columns in front. Just one to the gentleman. Suddenly he saw her. He had a muchkin of water at the ready, so... Eleanor Summerfield.
Not a muchkin.
Why not?
Because it wouldn't hold water.
I thought they were those dwarfs out of the Wizard
of
Oz.
That's right. A munchkin.
A muchkin of water is 3/4 of a pint. So that's
dear.
2 to the gentleman.
Pity.
At the ready, so he could paduke her if she tried to kringle him. Eleanor Summerfield.
He wouldn't paduke her with a pint of water.
What would he paduke her with? One, Lance Percival.
3/4 of a pint of water.
A paduke is a Burmese type of rosewood.
Yes.
Yes. Right. You can paduke with rosewood. If she tried to crinkle him to a door with a peg.
What?
Anybody want to argue? Yes.
Yeah, I think there's something wrong there. Crinkle him to a door with a...
Peg. P-A-I-G.
I think she's a very strange lady with rather nasty habits.
Well, that's still to the ladies. There's nothing wrong with that. Right. Crinkle means to fasten with a withe, and peg means a firm blow. She missed his chest, but hit him smartly on his knee. Eleanor Summerfield.
Is it smartly on his what?
On his knee.
Knee?
Hmm.
No, she wouldn't hit him on his knee.
Well, she couldn't help it, because that's where she happened to hit him. It means his fist, and that's another two to the gentleman. And the score at the end of that part is 27 to the ladies, and only 25 to the gentleman.
Oh, my goodness.
Right. Memory test now. I read out one of Mr. Messiter's jokes, and later I'll read it out again, and the teams will spot the differences. Jock was on his first visit to London, and he'd heard that Baker Street Station was at the end of Baker Street, so he waited for a bus. How much to Baker Street Station, he asked as the bus came in. The conductor said 30p. The traffic was slow, and Jock was a Scot, so he ran alongside the bus for the next two stops. How much is it now, he asked. The conductor said, it'll be 50p now, you're running the wrong way. And while our chuckles die away, I'll hand over to, at the piano, Steve Race.
I was determined to start this week with a classic, a cantata from one of Bach's chorales. Unfortunately, that took up rather a lot of my allotted time. Also, unfortunately, you didn't know that it was the other way around. It was a chorale from a cantata.
Yeah.
I must play something quick to make up for it, so I'll play you my own study in G-flat. Oh, Tim.
Not in G-flat.
That's very perceptive of you. It's not in anything, is it?
Yes, that was
so
what
you
I was
get,
saying on the same.
You get the two marks. Yeah. Clever lad. I owe it to you, I think, after that, to play something slow and romantic. In Shakespeare's words, though music oft hath such a charm to make bad good and good provoke to harm, the words are those of the Duke of Vienna in Measure for Measure. Or never mind the quality, feel the wit. Here, and Tim, you think there's something wrong with that, and I'll
yes,
agree
your
with you.
Second title is wrong.
Yes, fair enough. Yes. Two marks to you. Eleanor?
Be the Duke of Navarre, wouldn't it?
Duke of Vienna's right. You're giving two more away. Yeah.
Oh, I say.
Here, anyway, here, in the words of W.S. Gilbert, is a little list. Played it so nicely too. Lance.
The diddly bits.
Yes,
the
diddly one was Dutroux. That was me. Mm. Two marks to you. Music there by Frank Liszt, 19th century composer. Gillian.
Oh, we won't have Frank.
No. What would
He's
you like
Franz.
Instead?
Franz.
Liszt, yes. Two marks to you. I suppose Liszt's Second Hungarian Rhapsody is, so to speak, the top of the list. Julian.
Wasn't there a bit of a twiddle there?
Yes, a little brion.
Little Dutroux de twiddle.
Yes. I did try. Eleanor, what would you like instead?
No, you see, now you played that bit of calm and I can't hear it.
Should have been, yeah. Well, I'll give you the two marks anyway. Chopin was a year old when Liszt was born in 1811, but it wasn't until 13 years later that Brahms was born. By that time, of course, Liszt and Chopin were 13 and 12 respectively. While in 1849, when Chopin died, Brahms was only 16, as against Liszt's 38... Tim, did you wish to say something?
Well, I'm going to just say that there's something wrong there.
Yes. We're getting a bit Brahms and Liszt here.
There was something wrong.
I think it was Brahms's age.
I got their ages wrong way around. 13 and 12 should have been 12 and 13. I'll give you the marks and I'll just play the piano again, shall I? That theme comes from the Grieg Piano Concerto, which the composer played over to Liszt for his approval. Eleanor?
No.
Yes, 2 marks to the gentleman. Liszt had already by then written his third Hungarian Rhapsody. This is from the second. Tim?
No, he hadn't.
Yes, he had. 2 marks to you. You missed the tautology of already by then. But never mind.
Oh, yes.
This is from his second Hungarian Rhapsody. Eleanor, something
like
wrong again. It's 2 marks to you. May I just remind you that I'm talking about Franz Liszt, born in the same year as Chopin, as I told you earlier on. Lance?
No, 1 year difference.
1 year later, that's right, in 1811. That beautiful Liszt composition with which I began this week, Liebestraum, ends like this. Tim?
You didn't begin with that,
no,
did you?
No, quite right, I didn't. 2 marks to you. Can you give me the note?
Bing.
No.
Dong.
Yes, you got it. Dong. A marking.
Thank you, Steve Race. And at the end of that musical mistake spot, the ladies are leading by 1 point, by 41 to 40. Back to the memory test. Jack was on... It was quick, Tim Rice.
Jock.
2 marks. Was on his first trip to London, and he had heard that Eleanor Somerville...
Was it his first visit?
Yes, it was. 2 marks. And he had heard that Euston Station was at... Tim Rice.
Baker Street.
2 marks. Was at the end of Baker Street. Tim Rice.
Top of Baker Street.
No, at the end of Baker Street. 2 to the ladies. So he looked for a bus. How much to Baker... Eleanor Somerville.
Waited for a bus.
2 marks. How much to Baker Street Station, he asked as the train came in. Tim Rice.
Bus.
2 marks. The driver said... Tim Rice.
The conductor.
2 marks. 20p. Tim Rice.
30p.
2 marks. The traffic was slow. Tim Rice.
I don't think it was slow.
Yes, it was. 2 to the ladies. And Jock was Scottish. So, Gillian Reynolds.
Was a Scot.
2 marks. So he walked alongside Eleanor Somerville.
He ran.
2 marks. Alongside the bus for the next 3 stops. Tim Rice.
2 stops.
2 marks. How much is it the new? Gillian Reynolds.
I love the voice, but I don't think that's what he said.
What did he say?
How much is it now?
2 marks. He asked. The conductor said, Gillian Reynolds.
He inquired, I think.
He asked was right. 2 to the gentleman. The conductor said, it'll be 50p now. Gillian Reynolds.
He did, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Yes. 2 to the gentleman. You're running backwards. Eleanor Somerville.
Running the wrong way.
2 marks. We are still level pegging. It's 57 to the ladies, 56 to the gentlemen. All words have at some time or other been invented. Tim Rice?
Well, I'm not sure whether invented is the right word.
It's perfectly right. 2 to the ladies. But among the most recent are Yahoo, which was made up by Sir Ernest Gowers, Gillian Reynolds.
Now, I don't think Yahoo is a recent word.
No?
Because, as far as I remember, that's Jonathan Swift, isn't it?
Yes, 2 marks in Gulliver's Travels, 2 marks. And the noun quark, which was first seen in Finnegan's Wake by Wyndham Lewis, and has since... Gillian Reynolds?
Oh, that was James Joyce.
So it was. And has since been applied, 2 marks, by a physicist to the atom. Gillian Reynolds.
Now, I don't think quarks are atoms. I think they're to do with pulsars and black holes.
Well, let's not go into too much of that. But the particle which is the basis of all matter is now called the quark.
That's what she meant.
Yes. That's a black hole, if ever I saw one.
That happy word chortle was created by Damon Runyon. The place name Gillian Reynolds.
It's much older than Damon Runyon.
Tell me.
I think it's your 14th, 15th century, somewhere around
there. Nonsense, you have 1 mark. Where does chortle come from? Anybody?
From the Latin.
Another one to the ladies. It's Lewis Carroll, Through the Looking Glass. The place name Shangri-La appears only in Rider Haggard's She. Julian Reynolds.
Now, it's not Rider Haggard's
Lost
She.
Horizon.
It's Lost Horizon by James Thingy.
Yes.
Yes.
Lost Horizon.
You've got your two marks. Another one for James Thingy. James who?
Spencer.
Another to the ladies. James Hilton, it should be.
Yes.
Runcible, as many people know, is another word by Lewis Carroll. Tim Rice.
Edward Lear.
Two marks. And he created that word in about 1900. Utopia, Tim Rice.
Well, it depends what you mean by about. I would have said not about 1900.
Well, what would you have said?
1900.
Two to the ladies. It was 1871. No. That's quite a long way out.
Oh, that is about 1900.
Utopia is a word from which comes utopian, an adverb from the brain of George Whedon. Gillian Rowe.
Now, you've got two there, because utopian is an adjective, not
so
an adverb.
So it is, too much.
And George Whedon... that wasn't him, it was Sir Thomas More.
So it was, the blessed Sir Thomas More. Yes, two marks, the other two. The word blatant first appeared in The Fairy Queen by Christopher Marlowe. Tim Rice.
Spencer.
Spencer, two marks. Those highly descriptive words, heebie-jeebies and hotsy-totsy, both came from Tim Rice?
They're not highly descriptive because they are nouns.
Nouns can be
you
descriptive.
You can have a descriptive noun. Oh, yes, yes, yes.
How? Give me one.
Rubbish.
Heebie-jeebies, hotsy-totsy. Through to the ladies.
Name
both
it.
Came from the pen of Billy Diebeck. Tim Rice.
Not true, no.
Absolutely
no,
true. Two more to the ladies.
She typed.
From the pen of Billy Diebeck, the comic striptease artist. Lance Percival.
Not striptease. Strip cartoons?
Yes, two marks. And now the score is 80 to the ladies, 62 to the gentlemen. No word in this next paragraph will end with letter A for apple, followed by the letter L for lamp. No word will end with A-L. An example of a hospitable and commendable but unusual hostel is Tim Rice?
Unusual.
Two marks. Is hard to find, but not impossible if you search a modern citadel. Elaine Reynolds?
I made a mistake there. That's L.
I got on my hypothetical and very beautiful Eleanor Summerfield.
Hypothetical?
Two marks. And very beautiful camel to make a sensible demonstrational journey wearing my... Tim Rice?
Demonstrational.
Two marks. Wearing my ample, simple sable. Tim Rice?
Well,
two to the ladies. Simple sable example of a purple wimple which looked a bit digital on my... Gillian Reynolds.
Digital.
Two marks on my balding Socratical pate. This, Eleanor Summerfield.
Socratical.
Two marks. This camel was no vessel of the desert, but a successful, peaceful, special caramel-colored vehicle. Lance Percival.
Special.
Two marks. So named because it looked remarkable and a bit piratical, halfway between Tim Rice.
Piratical.
Two marks. Halfway between a mangle and a miracle, and owned by my Aunt Mabel, Eleanor Summerfield. No, two to the gentleman. The principle of a rather Gillian Reynolds?
Principle.
Two marks. The principle of a rather puritanical but plausible... Lance Percival?
Puritanical.
Two marks. But plausible and highly desirable academical and... Tim Rice?
Hesitation.
Wrong game. Highly desirable academical...
Academical.
Yes, I think Eleanor had that first. Two marks. And unimpeachable historical college for girls... Gillian Reynolds.
Historical.
Two marks. Whose behavior was questionable across the channel, but whose looks were capital. Tim Rice.
Capital.
Two marks. And at the end of that last paragraph, the score is 92 to the ladies and 80 to the gentlemen. On behalf of our two teams, Eleanor Summerfield and Gillian Reynolds, and Tim Rice and Lance Percival, and Steve Race, our musical mistakes man, I'll say goodbye.
Many a Slip was devised and written by Ian Messiter. The chairman was Roy Plumley, and the producer... Paul Mayhew Archer.